Flightcom Heart, Horvald, Math Behemoth moving on your position, bearing 200. Basilisk Outriders on me. Maya, lost. After what felt an age, Horvald forced some order on the gecko and had it back on its feet. Two down, or properly injured anyway. He stared out through those reptilian eyes. Both the radar and terrain scanner were down, lost in the tumble. He couldn't pick anything up. The gecko's tongue licked out, but the air was too full of the scents of blood and sand to discern the position of their remaining enemies. Horvald moved back towards the hog. His gecko was hurt. Its left rear had damage at the knee, seriously depleting speed, and there were cuts on its back and flanks. He didn't think he could repel another concerted attack. Without the electronic aids, their isolation was acute. His shoulders hunched and he shivered, anticipating the inevitable. Even so, the violence of the attack took him by surprise. He saw the basilisk tearing in at right angles at the last moment, jaws grabbing the gecko's neck right behind its skull and driving him to the right and onto his side. The gecko flailed, but the basilisk held on. Another sprinted in unnoticed until he felt the awful sensation of teeth tearing at his ride's belly. The gecko struggled briefly, but its life was pouring onto the sand. Flightcom Heart, Horvald, Math Behemoth moving on your position, A claw swiped down on Horvald's barely protected back. He grunted, the sensation of pain mercifully brief, because of the teeth shattering his skull.
Try harder, snapped Avery. I need it clean. I know it's a transmission. What is it saying?
Trying, Commander.
The operator bent to his task, his ears reddening. Avery stalked away back to the tack table, staffed by increasingly hollow-eyed staff. It was as busy as a daytime mission schedule, but with Muller in flight command, it was left to Kirby to spread some encouragement and calm a few nerves. Where the hell Solomon was anyone's guess. Actually, it wasn't. She was sleeping, as only the truly deluded can sleep, safe in the knowledge that she'd still be the all-powerful super-bitch in charge when she woke. Avery stared at the screens ranged around the front of the C&C, seeing vague washing images of what was pretty much right outside the front door. The hog was as good as blind. There were atmospherics out there that defied physics as far as she was concerned. At her disposal, she had the full spectrum of light and radio wave technology, and not one of them, not one, could pierce more than 8 kilometers of the storm. As a result, every specialist worth the name had been turfed out of bed to try and squeeze the systems. So she also had Rosenbach in her ear, telling her how everything she was doing was depleting the scant resources left to her by this or that fraction of a degree. If she believed everything the tweaker said, the creaky old Behemoth would probably keel over just after dawn. Worse than all that, the platoons she'd sent out to place a forward sensor grid had disappeared into the storm, and none had been heard from since. She supposed she shouldn't be surprised by that, but of course Muller wanted to send out a whole load more to play hide-and-seek. And now they had confirmation that someone, from somewhere, was attempting repeated contact. It couldn't possibly be good news. How bad? Well, that was the question.
A free night in the bridge bar to anyone who can give me an accurate weather forecast.
Avery saw a line of heads drop a little lower and focus harder on their screens.
All right, what was the last best forecast? Still claiming this will blow over by midday?
Yes, ma'am, came a voice. Weather radar and associated sensors are down. We're trying to gauge changes in the storm using traditional methods.
Like sticking your head out of a door and seeing how much sand you get in your hair,
said Lieutenant Edney from her tack table. Tired laughter ran around the room.
Something like that, said the forecaster, but also anemometers and a good old hydrometer.
What are they telling you?
Asked Avery.
Honestly? Almost nothing that you couldn't work out by sticking your head out of the door,
she replied to more laughter. Avery nodded, happy to let the humour break the tension.
XO, Rosenbach, my office, please. Contingencies, contingencies.
Avery led them into her office, which was a deliberately small affair, comprising just a desk with 3 screens, a couple of chairs in front of it for occasions such as this, and 3 beautiful shots of the Heart of Granite on the 2 solid walls. The other two were glass, and looked out over the C&C, specifically the tack tables and front screens. Avery sat in her straight-backed swivel chair and waved the others to seats.
"We're about 2 hours from dawn. We have no idea how long we'll be blind, and we can assume the Maputo knows our position. What's our move?"
Kirby almost laughed, but settled for a half-smile, half-frown.
"You think the Maputo might move on us?"
"I think so."
"She's on her last legs, though. More likely the Virunga or the Mombasa to give her the chance to escape to the sea."
"They're too far away to be a danger with an overnight march. The spy fly was Maputo's," said Avery. "And we're on our last legs too, but we're still intending to attack."
Rosenbach shifted in her seat, and Avery gestured her to speak.
"I've studied the footage of the Maputo's tail up from a few days back, and there is clear and significant degradation of central musculature and core strength, hence the vibrations playing into the legs. I find it hard to believe they would choose to advance in a sandstorm, even though it's physically possible."
"Chimes with my thinking," said Kirby.
"Assume they know the hog's condition and are planning to attack as a result."
"The potential for the Maputo to accrue damage is huge, Commander," said Rosenbach.
She shrugged.
"We're all well-versed with the issues of sand versus behemoth. That's why we seal up when there's a sandstorm, and why I advised against launching geckos, even from the emergency port. Even with the blowers and vacuums going full blast, a behemoth on the march in a desert storm is taking on sand in massive quantities across its body, all blown in deep at 100 km/h an hour. It'll get into the armor plate joints, the spin-up mechanisms for weapons and solars, retractable joint covers, directional comms linkage, even ammo boxes and missile loaders, auto-feed and tracking systems. And let's not forget the Maputo's lungs, throat and mouth. Even with debris filtering, you cannot keep it all out."
"All right, let's focus," said Avery. "It's great the Maputo will be itchy if she's marching. What does it mean in practical terms?"
"Our best case, all sorts of stuff starts grinding, slowing down, or seizing up. It could expose weaknesses for attack as well as compromised defense. For me, if they are moving up, they're taking a huge gamble."
Kirby raised his eyebrows.
"Only one reason why they'd be doing it."
Avery locked gaze with him, and they both spoke together.
"Wyverns."
Wyverns were short-range, heavy, armor-depleting, burrowing missiles. The sort of ordnance every behemoth carried for the day two of them came into close contact. Missiles that, if fired from long range, would be taken out of the sky on a whim, but when fired close and flat, gave the defenders little chance to deploy effective countermeasures.
"I'll wake the crew, put Muller's emergency deployment into effect, and write the audio and P-Palm bulletin," said Kirby. "Not long till dawn, and depending on how close they want to get, they may not wait for the storm to blow out."
"Thanks, Robert. Eleanor, get hold of Markov. Calculate how much you can divert to our EMP net and armor harmonics while keeping the air flowing and the drakes fully prepped. Everything else can pause for the time being."
"Yes, Commander."
"Are you all right?"
Across the table, Rosenbach had gone a little pale.
"Do you really think they're moving in to attack, hand to hand?"
Avery raised her eyebrows.
"I would."
Chapter 35. I don't suppose any Drake pilot believes they're going to fall. They all have faith the war will end before they do. And that's fine. But when it does, how will we walk away from the biggest high of our lives? Maximus Halloran. Maya screamed at the fractionally brightening sky. Ganeef, McCarthy and Reynolds were all gone. He'd heard gunfire, explosions, shouting and screaming from the group converging on the rally point, and then nothing. Horvald was surely a victim too. At least Picolet was still alive and was shouting the odds from Station 3. But Sid had gone quiet, so Maya was running to Station 1 to find him and trying to ignore the memory of his dismembered platoon members at Station 2.
"Behemoth still oncoming," said Picolet. "Approaching Station 1, speed 15 clicks.
"Copy that, Pico," said Maya. "I can feel her through the ground."
"You okay now, sir?"
"No, and I reserve the right to scream some more until I am."
I'll tweak my volume accordingly.
Good call.
Meyer checked his tracking system, which told him he was 400 meters from Station 1. The vibrations through the ground were the familiar rumble of a behemoth on the march, though the equally familiar rolling thunder sounds were denied him by the endless howling gale, which showed no signs of abating.
Sid! Sid, do you copy? I refuse to believe you're dead. I need you, man. Come back!
Nothing.
Sid! Where are you, goddammit? Answer me! Even if you're dead, respond via spectral comms, you bastard! That is an order!
Meyer knew Sid was out there. It was daft, but if he'd been dead, the world would have been truly altered, and he'd have felt it. He heard what might have been static hiss, but might also have been someone shushing him. Meyer raised a grim smile.
"That's shh, sir," said Meyer. "Where are you?"
Meyer reached Station 1 and glanced down at the sensor equipment. He could just make out the radar's outline as it vibrated gently across the sand to the ripple of the advancing behemoth's march. Meyer stared out into the gloom, able to see sand driving east to west in the odd and faint glow of pre-dawn desert. The behemoth was close, probably no more than a click away now. He moved forwards, sensing the ground rising slightly, imagining what he'd do in Sid's position, then sprinkling it with batshit madness. After about 50 meters, having moved nearer the path of the Maputo and up a shallow rise, Meyer dropped prone. He nudged Sidhu in the ribs.
"As clandestine meeting points go, this is right up there," he said.
Sidhu turned. This close, Meyer could make out the hollowness of his eyes.
"It's beautiful, isn't it?" said Sidhu, his voice flat and empty. "Peace and majesty amidst the sand and wind. Makes you realize just how small you are. I would lie here forever if I didn't have to do some damage to someone. Lots of someones."
"Got to rein yourself in, Sid. No vengeance shit."
Sid looked forwards again. The Maputo was lumbering out of the gloom. She was mostly dark, but picked out by the thin heat signatures where her tail dragged and from the warmth of her exhaust. The Maputo was enormous. They all were, of course, but Meyer had never seen an enemy this close, and it was, well, majestic was right. Over a kilometre long, a little less than 200 metres high at the apex of the spine, and over 280 metres wide, all carried on 34 pairs of legs. She was a little squatter than the hart, but that just made her silhouette all the more malevolent. Live exercises outside the hart were one thing. This was wholly different. No one expected a soldier to get this close to an enemy behemoth, and it was an opportunity they couldn't pass up.
"She's a beauty, isn't she?"
said Sidhu.
"They all are," said Meyer.
"Question is, how do we issue some corrective punishment?"
Meyer chuckled.
"I've got a better idea."
"Oh, yes?"
"Yeah. Fancy the ride of your life?"
"Are you suggesting we carry spikes and lines for the specific purpose?" "Most useless kit ever," growled Sid.
"Not today, my friend."
Sidhu pushed Meyer hard in the shoulder. Meyer laughed.
"I like your thinking, boss."
"Of course. Let's do it."
The Maputo was confirmed inbound. Horvald's final communication had been cleaned up enough to be understood, and the General Quarters autocom had sounded before dawn. By now, the outer armour would be charged to deliver ECMs by the sackload. The 40 mils would be cleaned, oiled and coiled, the flank guns the same, and the missile batteries and anti-missile systems loaded and tracking. Elsewhere, programmes would be running to simulate the likely effect of successful EMP strikes and the time it would take to bring back critical systems. Every soldier was on standby, every Drake pilot was in the locker room, and every Drake, Gecko and Basilisk was taking on extra nutrition before being brought to ready. Well, nearly every Drake pilot. With her squad already on the flight deck and suiting up, Valera had gone to medical, not prepared to miss her early day visits to her recovering pilots, Roberts, Nugent, Holmes and Kane, but more importantly, her first ticket to see her pilot in landfill. Her demand to have visiting rights breached landfill protocol, but Kirby had agreed readily enough. No doubt the video of their conversation would be scrutinised for clues as to Max's whereabouts.
"You should go," said Kalani.
The ward was quiet. Every other patient was still asleep, aided by drugs for the most part, and wouldn't be woken with the hog under threat of attack. No one wanted to test the effects of a full-scale engagement on a patient well into the fall. It was different for Kalani, so early into the fall. Valera was sitting on the side of her bed, and Kalani was propped up with pillows, looking comfortable but terminally bored, her mind distracted by thoughts of her Drake and the inevitable loss of the beast beginning to consume her, slowly but surely. Valera squeezed her hand, wishing that they could reverse protocol and let her out to fly. Impossible, sadly.
"Bugger that," she said. "Miller knows where I am. There's no rush. Anyway, there's a gale blowing out there, and it's all very sandy. No place for a drake, eh?" "No, I guess not."
Kalani gave a deep sigh.
"Yeah, we wish you were with us too. Squadron's become a hollow place without you and Max. You made it live, you know?"
A tear rolled down Kalani's face, and she wiped it away quickly.
"Sorry, I'm not helping, am I?"
Kalani shook her head.
"No, the reverse. I've been desperate for a friendly face. I've hardly been here a moment, but I feel so removed. It's hard, Skipper, but at least I've got drugs to take away the craving for my Drake. And the rest of you are out of lockdown, so that's a plus." "Yeah, but only so we can fly to our deaths."
Kalani grinned.
"How I would love to be doing that. Flying or dying?" "Both."
There was no hint of humour in Kalani's voice, and Valera was briefly taken aback.
"Maybe..." "Maybe what? No one's going to let me out, Skipper. There's one path, and soon enough I'll be like Ella J over there, barely ever conscious, and when I am, screaming in fear and agony. What a marvellous future lies ahead."
"There's always hope," said Valera.
Kalani met her gaze squarely.
"No, there isn't. Not in here."
Valera let her head drop and nodded.
"Sorry." "Not your fault."
It was Kalani's turn to squeeze her hand, and Valera couldn't help but smile at the irony of it all.
"Anyway, it's not all bad. I've made some friends, and I've even been reading a book for the first time in years." "Oh, yes. What friends, exactly?"
Kalani pointed at two beds.
"Diana and Dylan. Hard to believe they're both so young when they look so old and frail. It's tragic, really. But they look after me in their own way, and I try to do the same to them. Sit with them and talk if they want."
"And what did they make of Max?"
Kalani rolled her eyes.
"Holy Mother, don't get them started on Max. To hear them, you'd think he was some saviour sent from heaven. I had it time after time yesterday. They'd be chatting or something, and then catch sight of me, and then one of them would strike a great theatrical pose and shout, 'I'm Max fucking Halloran.' It's, well, it's just weird. But he did have that effect on people, didn't he?"
Valera nodded and glanced up the ward so Kalani wouldn't see the tears welling up. Her comm crackled.
"Valera, we need you on the flight deck."
"Yes, sir," she said.
She looked back to Kalani, who shrugged, and the two of them hugged hard. Valera felt Kalani's heart tripping away and her breath getting shorter as she tried to keep her sobs back.
"Come back and see me.
Try and stop me."
They pushed back, and Valera stood up and brushed herself down.
"How's Grim?"
asked Risa.
"Remember I told you it was a mistake to fall in love with her?" said Valera.
Kalani nodded.
What a sack of shit piece of advice that was. She's amazing. She's there for all of us. She's buddied up with Paul to look after your Drake, and we're pushing hard to get her in to see you.
You'd better go. I need to cry now.
You got it, Risa. And believe me, there's always hope.
Valera ran for the flight deck, fighting back her own tears, but finding herself on the verge of laughter too, at the thought of Dylan's and Diana's impersonation of Max. The whole thing had a surreal quality. She had almost made it when the attack sirens sounded their haunting flat notes, alternating every few seconds with ship-wide orders. Valera sprinted the rest of the way, bursting onto the flight deck to find it teeming with people, ground lizards, drakes, and more supply carts than she knew the Hog had on its roster. The noise was extraordinary, energizing, and unnerving. The hammer claws were racing from the locker room towards their pens, with White Heat and Firestorm hot on their heels. Entire companies of Marines were boarding geckos. Basilisks were screeching and swinging their heads, their whole bodies vibrating with the imminence of the hunt. The deck itself was still lowering into position, the Hog's tail still arcing up, and sand was blowing in. Valera wasn't at all comforted by the shuddering that accompanied the jaw movements. Muller was blaring orders over the PA. Every comm channel she switched to was alive with chatter, and she settled on the flight comms as she moved quickly across the busy deck, picking out this and that from the multiple voices on the channel.
EMP net active for incoming traffic. 40mm firing solution, Delta 4 active. Takeoff angles of 34 degrees or less. Maputo's position confirmed at 50.50 kilometers distance on bearing 197. Multiple missiles inbound. ECM full spread launched. Hammer claws, await clearance when you stand on the runway. The air's a little crowded right now. White Heat, too slow, step it up. I need 3 squadrons sky high on my go. Incoming, incoming.
Detonations echoed across the flight deck, enemy missiles striking the EMP net or meeting the heart's anti-missile system. The heart of granite shuddered under the multiple waves of sound, and shrapnel rattled against her scales, harmless and spent. Valera pushed open the locker room door, and the sounds of chatter had died away before the bone and metal had thunked back into its frame. 75 pilots made a whole lot of silence, and from every rank of lockers, eyes followed her as she moved to her own and opened it to pull out her suit.
"She's fine," announced Valera, loud enough to carry the whole locker room. "Or as fine as you can get when you're a landfill resident."
She began to strip off her fatigues, aware that pilots from all 3 squadrons were closing in to hear more. She paused and held up her hands.
"Thank you all for your concern. Risa sends her love, and there's nothing left to do but get out there and fight. I'm not doing a this is for Risa speech, because it isn't. This is for the Hog, and it's for United Europa, and for all those undeserving rats we serve back in Paris, and Berlin, and London, and wherever the fuck your old cap city is. Now bugger off. I want to talk to my squad in private."
While the pilots from Flamehawk and Lava Flow beat a retreat to a respectful distance, Valera carried on suiting up, Redfern and Gurney jumping in to help. She took out her mobile earpiece before pulling her hood over her head and connecting into the suit's comnet. It felt good to be wearing it again, despite the tightness.
"I'm going to make this quick. Risa needs a light. She's only been there half a second, but she's already desperate. We need to give her hope if we can."
"You're talking about Max," said Stepanek.
Valera shrugged.
"If any of you have any inkling, any sense of him out there, anything at all, however small, tell me. If he's out there, we're bringing him home."
"You think he might have survived?" asked Gurney.
"Can't fault a skipper for hoping," she said.
"And this is Max we're talking about,"
said Monteith.
"Yeah," said Valera,
warming to the thought.
"Max fucking Halloran."
She would have explained, but for a massive impact shaking the heart from spine to claw, shaking locker doors open. The behemoth bellowed with a pain that chilled them all and sent thrumming vibrations through the floor, a sound none of them had ever heard before, would never have thought to. Outside, ERCs of every class chittered, screeched, or roared in fear and confusion. Valera led the stampede towards the door, but they hadn't quite reached it before the lights went out.
"Bring the defense grid back online," ordered Avery. "Where's fire control? Rosenbach, get us back up. I need eyes."
There was uproar. In the dim lights offered by the backup generators, orders were flying across ranks of consoles and tack tables. The 200-meter arcs of screens across the front of the CNC was blank and dark. No radar, no thermals. Even the feed from the heart's eyes was down. They were deaf, blind, and defenseless.
"It's not an EMP strike," shouted Rosenbach, running towards Avery. "Wyvern, I think. Something's got through the armor at a dry spot, just like I feared. We haven't lost any systems independent of the Hog's core generator. Backups have already brought key environmental systems online. We still have the EMP net, but we don't have weapon systems or any powered musculature systems beyond vital functions."
Avery's head snapped round.
"What?" "Incoming missiles will not be targeted."
"Yes, I heard," said Avery. "We can take a few hits, can't we?"
"Armor has been prioritized, but it won't keep everything out."
"I'll take what I can get. What systems are disabled?"
"My best guess is the core power supply has been interrupted. Explains why no system with automatic redundancy has come back online."
"Make a better guess."
Rosenbach's cheeks reddened.
"Elements of the central electrical control systems have been compromised. The Hog is paralyzed."
Avery felt her first flush of real anxiety for about 10 years. She flicked out her peep-arm and pinged Muller on his private comm.
"Nick, we're in a real pickle here," said Muller.
Avery could hardly hear him above the din of voices yelling for something, anything to happen, and the sounds of what might have been destruction echoing up from the flight deck.
"Us too, Jerry. Tell me the flight deck is open."
"Not all the way."
"Shit. Can you launch Drakes?"
"Yes, but it'll be a challenge. Wind speed is dropping rapidly, but there's still plenty of sand in the air."
"The Maputo is going to give it a go, trust me. Get the Drakes up. Get them defending us from the spine out."
"What's going on, Nick?"
"We're paralyzed. You have to buy us some time."
"Understood. I'll get the Drakes busy. Muller out."
Avery looked up from her peep-arm to see Rosenbach staring at her. Multiple strikes impacted the Hog. Warnings flashed on a few screens, unnaturally bright amid the dominating gloom. Dust was shaken from the metal and bone roof. The heart moaned in pain again, a hideous, mournful sound.
"Hang on, old thing," said Avery. "How long before we're back up and running?"
"I don't even know what the core problem is," she said. "I'm locked out of 80% of systems. We're existing on workarounds."
"Get me back in control fast. Right now, our only line of defense is a few Drakes flying half-blind in a gale. Prioritize. I need my guns and my missiles."
"I understand, ma'am."
And Avery knew that she did. Because if the enemy got the drop on them, and the paralysis stunt was planned, not fortune, they could lose the Hog altogether.
Chapter 36. One thing you don't get to do as a Behemoth commander is give your ride a rub down or a scratch under the chin to let it know you care. Part of me wishes I could. But I suppose if I really want to get close to my Behemoth, I can put my hands in her brain instead. Commander Nicola Avery.
"Fire Drake Squadrons, Flight Command, Hammerclaw K, White Heat M, Lava Flow A, Firestorm E, Flamehawk G, Inferno X. Stack up for takeoff. You have your flight plans, your departure vectors, and your defense zones. Wind speeds are peaking at 103 kilometers per hour. Space is tight on exit, and there are some vicious vortices out there, so get the power on, get clear, and hunt well."
Valera nudged her Drake onto the crowded deck.
"Flight comm, Valex, Inferno X copies all."
Down towards the partially open ramp, the runway was a slowly clearing mess. The crippling strike had caused panic among the ground lizards. Riderless geckos and basilisks had scattered across the deck, sending ground crew and infantry running for cover. There were people down on the ground among fallen crates, medics in carts with blue and green lights flashing, word out to perform triage. Orders rang out from the comm, and a well-rehearsed procedure moved into action. Jockeyed basilisks began rounding up the stray lizards. Teams of ground crew and infantry moved in with lines and prods to push and pull the errant beasts back towards their pens, and where they could, jockeys mounted subdued rides. And all that in the jumping shadows of emergency lighting. Valera, once she was safely in the pouch, watched it through her drake's eyes. The clearing of the lizards was performed with admirable swiftness, but merely served to put the plight of injured infantry and crew in the spotlight. Valera counted over 30 lying amid the debris caused by the missile strikes. She saw neck braces, drips and splints, blood on the bone floor, and 3 shrouds spread over fatalities. She pursed her lips and waited, the Drakecom quiet, waiting for the signal, which came after an age and a further slam of incoming ordnance that shook spars from the roof, brought down lights and drew renewed screeches from already tense ground lizards. Her Drake, like all of them, radiated the desire to be free, to fly and wreak revenge.
All squadrons, flight command, runway is clear. Clear enough. Good luck out there. Hammerclaws, you are clear to run.
Valera sat her Drake back and stretched her neck so she could see them go. It remained a glorious sight. Her Drake's eyes were good, and the gloom coalesced into sharp grayscale images, giving her clear sight of the last few strides and takeoff. The Hammer's skipper cleared first, and Valera sucked in a breath as she saw the Drake blown hard to the right, before it steadied and drove straight on under the tail, picking its moment to power away. And so they launched. Every now and again, an anxious shifting of Drake claws from the watchers signified a tricky takeoff, or a particularly robust blast from the gale. The worst was a white-heat Drake, blown onto its back as it picked up its claws to fly. The Drake disappeared below the jammed ramp, and comm silence fell, barring calls to the unfortunate pilot. The whoops that accompanied the reappearance of the Drake as she rose up to the left of the tail and swept out of the narrow gap and away bore testament to the tension running through them all. It felt like an age before Valera was front and center, her depleted squad, just 10 out of the original 24, lined up behind her.
Flightcom, Val X, we are good to go.
Copy that, said Muller. Strike hard and all come back. Inferno X, you are clear to run.
Acknowledged, said Valera.
She rolled her shoulders and splayed her fingers. Her Drake shook herself at the wing roots, then snapped her wings out and back. They rocked into takeoff position and raced down the runway. Ahead, where she was used to the wide open space of a fully deployed ramp and tail, there was a narrow slit, beyond which Dawn was struggling to make an impression. Missiles still ripped into the Hog's outer armour, and the Behemoth shuddered at each impact. An EMP strike made the defensive net shiver. Nothing gave, but neither hide nor polarised shield could maintain integrity forever. Valera reached minimum velocity well before the hatched zone and focused her Drake on more speed. She could already feel the fingers of the gale trying to push her off course. Her Drake accelerated harder, stamped the last 5 long steps, and took to the air. Immediately, eddies and vortices, whipping around the ramp, the tail, and from the paralyzed beam off legs below, struck her. She corrected, using tiny movements of her arms and legs, and reaching out with her mind to suggest balanced flight. Freed of the minute delays of purely physical direction, the Drake dipped a wing, flared the other, and adjusted its altitude, allowing Valera to find the space to get them clear. Beyond the shelter of the Hog, she was exposed to the full force of the storm. She pushed into the lightning sky as hard as she could, the gusting sand-filled winds buffeting her with each wingbeat. Sand fizzed across scales and drove into her face, forcing her to seal the pouch completely and rely on filtered air. The knowledge that Max couldn't possibly have survived the night in conditions far worse bled into her mind, and though she tried to cling on to hope, there was none.
Inferno X, Val X, it's cruel on exit. Give your drakes their heads, let them fly out. Rendezvous on me and let's gather in a rotation. Visibility is no more than 100 meters at best.
Detonations bloomed against the heart, sending plumes of flame and debris into the sky.
That's got to hurt. Flightcom, Val X, got a bead on those last impacts. Let me get closer. IX, in my wake.
Copy, Val X. Remaining squadrons are moving into position. No contacts as yet.
She listened to the acknowledgements of her squad as she ducked back towards the heart, levelling out at 100 and flying from tail to nose before angling up again, her squad in her wing whirls.
Flightcom, Val X. Significant damage along the right flank between the 4th and 20th vertebrae. Multiple impacts. None appears to have caused a rupture, but there is some smouldering and minor cracking. I have a single large impact to the heart's head right on the bridge of her nose. Fires are burning. Can't confirm intrusive strike, but it's a focused attack. No other skull strikes.
Copy, Van X. Get back on station. Flightcom out.
Passing over the skull damage, her drake shuddered and barked. A confusion of emotions and half-grabbed images ran through Valera, none of which she could make out. Valera shook her head to clear it, but the after-images left her feeling a little anxious. She ascended to 1,000 meters and moved into a wide circle on station, seeing her squad drop in to make the rotation.
"Any problems, report in now," she said over the squadcom.
No one reported in.
"Squad, we'll take this in chevrons. Stepanek and C3, cover the left flank and respond to calls from the hammers. Monteith, you've got C2. Cover the right flank, white heat and lava flow. I'll take the head, Firestorm and Flamehawk. Keep me posted. Trust yourselves. Trust the squad. We are IX.
They all joined the chorus. Valera noted the sky growing brighter. Vision was increasing, up to 150 by now. The gale was finally blowing itself out, and she knew that as fast as it had come on them, it would be gone, and most of the sand would drop from the sky. She hoped the enemy would launch before then. IX was good in the dust.
All squadrons, flight command. Missile barrage ended. Expect Drake contacts. Flightcom out.
They want the hog alive, said Valera. Now if she's immobilized, they won't so much as scratch her again. Contacts, contacts.
It was O'Regan.
White Heat has contacts. We have 100 plus inbound. Gonna need assistance here on a bearing of 165. Regan M, Val X, can you be more specific? My pleasure, Val, said O'Regan. I'm at 1,000 and flying below. Now, 5 squadrons, repeat, 5 squadrons in wide front formation. They are at a height of 200, airspeed 150, bearing 040. Subtle. Flightcom, can you confirm contacts?
Negative, Val X. You're beyond current radar range, said Muller. All squadrons, orders. Engage enemies on bearing 165. Regan M will assign targets, IX to remain on support and second strike. Hit them hard.
Copy, Flightcom, said O'Regan. All squads ascend to 1,000 and come on to 165. Match speed with the enemy and make it snappy. This just won't last long. Targets as follows.
The UE Drakes moved into attack positions, Valera bringing her chevron up 100 meters adrift of Firestorm and Flamehawk. She didn't much like the idea of IX as a backup, but despite the upgrade, their depleted number made them the obvious second strike team. Shame, though. A full-strength IX could have practically destroyed a MAF squad in one pass. Valera listened while the confirmations rolled in. The Hog Drakes were on station. Below them, picked out as shadows in the remaining dust, the Maputo's drakes closed on the stricken behemoth.
Flightcom, Regan M, all squadrons standing by.
Copy, said Muller. We have you and your targets on scope. 5 clicks out and closing. You are cleared to attack.
Copy, Flightcom. All squads, strike is a go.
The Hog squadrons attacked with IX drakes tracking them, looking for their moment. A dark mass ahead and below, about 300 meters, resolved itself into a broad formation of sand-brown drakes. The 5 squadrons, in near-perfect sphere formations, were spread across a click of sky.
"Very pretty," said Gurney. "Even pretty when we set it on fire."
"Reckon they're all upgraded?" asked Monteith.
"Reckon they're not," said Gurney. "They aren't coming in fast enough."
The ferocity of the attack was breathtaking, and Valera winced as white heat battered into the central sphere. Brutal impacts bent MAF drakes in two. Claws ripped great rents in drake flesh or sought holds for close fighting. MAF and Hog drakes twisted and turned, bit and struck, while they dropped towards the deck, each looking for the killing hold or the heartbeat in which to breathe superheated flame. Under the assault, the enemy sphere dissolved into disarray. The sheer violence was repeated across the enemy formation. Valera was tuned in to the IX squadcom, while her people reported on dozens of enemy drakes taken from the sky. Below her, the firestormers had smashed into the enemy's left flank. They'd split into two, the first section crashing into the rear of the enemy formation, shattering the sphere, shunting enemies off balance, biting, ripping, killing. The second section came in right behind, pouring fire over struggling enemies, heads angled back to play their flame downwind, and sending multiple bodies tumbling and smoking from the sky. Valera counted seven down to one firestorm drake with wings shredded, spiraling into the sand.
"Our turn," said Valera. "In your wing pairs, IX, engage at will."
The Maputo's drakes fought for cohesion, but with hog squadrons all over them, they had been forced to break away to reform in smaller defensive units.
"Skipper?" asked Gurney.
"Drop off me 20 meters, Gurex. I'll pick the target. You sweep up the collateral."
"Copy, Skipper."
Valera flexed her toes, and her drake's claws mimicked her move. She flew on a few beats before diving vertically on the remains of the left-hand sphere of MAF flyers. Valera backed her drake's wings and slammed into her target. The force of impact broke its neck right behind its skull, and the two of them rolled right and down, clipping a second, knocking it out of balance. Gurney swooped by a wing beat later, overflying the clipped drake and toasting the enemy from snout to tail at very close range, before angling upwards steeply to join her.
"Nice work," she said. "Keep it going while they're off guard. Stay among them."
Valera drove into a tight upward right-hand curve. The air was charged with flame and anger as drakes collided, bodies rippling and spinning. Necks twined, fangs sought dominant hold, claws raked and tail spikes struck. Firestorm and Flamehawk came round for their second passes. Drakes surged in, blistering a corridor into the centre of the battle, their arrow formation devastatingly effective. At least four more enemies were taken from the fight, plummeting down to the sand to join the littering of corpses that had to number over 40 now. Sunlight bled over the horizon. Her drake locked its gaze onto a pair of MAFs whipping through the sky, on the tail of two firestormers.
"Watch my six, Gurex. I'm on the hunt."
"I'm on it, Skipper."
Valera twitched her left arm down. Her drake barrel-rolled, taking her around a friendly drake. Ahead, she could see her targets through a confusion of sparring drakes, and by the focus of their flying, they were still tracking the firestorm pair, and maybe 200 meters adrift of them and closing. The augmented enemy were fast, and their slip movements were a contrast to those of the drakes they pursued. Not dramatic, but they're all the same.
"Into my slipstream, Gurex. Two targets. You take left."
"Copy, Skipper."
Valera opened her mind a fraction more, her drake sucking it in greedily, cajoling her for more. Valera twitched her arms and imagined speed. Her drake reacted, the connection sending a rush through her body and mind. Great beats of its wings powered it into the maelstrom of the fight. A knot of sparring drakes dropped into her path. She snapped her drake's wings back and shot through the tiniest of gaps, feeling the brushing of bodies. Her drake fed her imagery of the dozens of individual battles in their zone that would cross their path. Valera felt the suggestions of direction from her ride, overlaid them with her own, and plotted her route, switching left to drive around a tumbling pair locked by tooth and claw, and ducking under two enemies being chased by six lava flow flyers. Valera closed fast, her upgraded drake allowing her to make the minute adjustments in the crowded battle zone to keep her right on them. Abruptly, the two enemies split, abandoning their pursuit, and Valera and Gurney broke smoothly, a sharp turn and climb putting them into their target slipstreams.
"Skipper, you've got company," said Navon. "Heading in on your seven."
"I'll break off," said Gurney.
"Negative," said Valera. "I've got these guys."
She nicked left and right past drakes flying across her path, saw her target dive left to avoid a collision, and calculated an intercept that her drake followed to perfection. She pulled in a wing, used the other as a drag, and turned on a pebble, suggesting tight fire. The enemy raced below her, catching harsh flame across its wings. They blistered and tore, sending it hurtling out of control to smash into another drake. A heart drake.
"Shit," she spat. "Gurex, report."
"Target down," he said. "Coming back to you."
"You've still got two on your six," said Navon. "I'm in pursuit with Zavex."
Valera angled sharply up, turned on her tail and powered back down. The drakes hunting her emerged from a confusion of flyers. They had no chance to avoid her. She picked one, and her drake's head snaked out and caught the oncoming drake on the top of the skull. Wings tight, Valera turned a sharp half-roll, dragging the enemy's head around to snap its neck. She imagined force, and her drake crushed its skull before letting it drop. Her drake exulted, spitting fragments from its mouth, and they spun in the air, momentarily unbalanced as the math drake's weight dropped away, before powering upwards.
Nevex, report. The other one's escaped. Oh, no, it hasn't. Ouch! Hot pouch, courtesy of Gurney.
Valera smiled.
Good work, C1. Reform at 1,000 on my marker. Let's assess.
She climbed past the battle and into clear air, seeing almost 300 drakes still engaged in high-velocity combat below her. The sand density was dropping rapidly. Light was flooding across the desert, and she could see both the Heart of Granite close by, and there, down to the south-southwest, the squatter Maputo, 50 kilometers away. Her emergency broadcast comm crackled and fizzed, and she caught snatches of a voice repeating a message.
Unknown contact on channel Alpha 1 Alpha. Identify yourself.
The voice spoke again. Different words this time, and the odd one was clear enough. Valera swore, sure that she was understanding, but hardly believing it.
Captain Maya, it's Valera Orin. Maya, is that you?
Chapter 37. She stabbed me. She stabbed me 1,000 times and poured ice into my veins. Apparently that's how a drake demonstrates affection. Maximus Halloran. Max's eyes opened on the shifting dark of the pouch encasing him. He could feel some residual pain, echoes of agony. It still felt like he was pierced in more places than he had places, but the ice-bound agony of it in his veins and the sheeting hot pain in his head had both faded.
"We're alive," said Max.
His voice caused them to shift. No, caused Martha to shift. No. Max stilled completely, while he decided whether to believe what had just happened. He had felt the sand beneath the tail when it moved. He had felt the dried feces shift on drake scales. Max rolled his shoulders, slowly and gently. Their wing shoulders brushed against the shifting dry matter, which felt like it was cracking and powdery.
"Whoa, that's weird."
He pushed out with his mind, but instantly knew he didn't have to. This wasn't yesterday or the day before, and the old ways were obsolete. She was all around him, just there. And where there should have been fear, Max felt exhilaration and strength. Martha wasn't at peace, though. Images began to tumble through his mind. The hog, the flight deck, the pen, the food tubes.
"We have to go home," said Max.
More imagery followed, some obviously borrowed from his memory. Kirby, landfill, Dylan and Diana, Hewitt with his swollen face.
"But we're dead if we don't go back, aren't we?"
Martha shifted again, and Max felt their hiding place cracking. Warmth suffused him, and an image of Annabeth came to him. Then Kalani, the skipper, Grimm, Montz.
"We have to go home, Princess. Now we're alive, we don't have a choice, do we?"
Sensations of muscle tension and the building of power chased themselves through Max. The piercings across his body tingled, energy coursed his system, and they exploded from the dried behemoth feces and drove straight up, wings beating strongly, head stretched towards the blue. They turned towards the rising sun, the air already hot, the growing warmth in their scales glorious. The wind across their body was cool and flecked with sand and dust. The faint rippling of membrane as it flowed around their wings and fled down their tail was an endless thrill. They banked and rolled, dived and climbed. Every move perfect, every tiny adjustment sheer delight.
so pure, so effortless. Max felt the modulating pressure of the pierce points, sifted the images and decoded the thoughts, blending them with his own. He felt his body moving, knowing it was as much him as her. Not that that mattered any more. There was no him and her, except where their minds meshed. There was only they.
"Wah! Who?"
screamed Max. Martha exulted too, her bellows shuddering through her body.
"Fucking hell! What a rush!"
They played, explored, but always moved south. Max experimented, moving his arms, legs and torso as he always had, as he had been trained to do. Martha still responded, but he felt her reluctance and it felt clumsy, slow. But now he'd tried the old way. He couldn't switch back. "A little help," he said. Images tumbled into his mind and the pierce points tingled again. Max felt himself relax, decoding the imagery as best he could, understanding with it the desire for partnership. For a moment, he still couldn't work out how to get there, access that place where their movements came from shared stimuli, somewhere in a joint subconscious. When it came to him, it was so obvious he laughed, Martha responding with a rattling in her throat. He stopped trying to fly, let all the tension leave his body, and simply imagined it. They barrel-rolled, turned a long spiral climb, and then powered away south. "That's more like it." Martha barked her pleasure. The wind was glorious chill across their body. They adjusted their wing attitude to take advantage of a slow-rising thermal. The yearning grew with every wing beat. Max felt it like he was an anchor being dragged from the ocean floor. Slowly at first, then gathering pace until it became an unstoppable pull, a pull he had no desire to halt. It was the call home. The call to Mother. Martha fed Max's anxiety, which he felt as a rising nausea. It coalesced as anger, and a growl rose in his throat. Martha roared, and they accelerated harder. They could feel it like waves across the shore. Mother was hurt. Images of the hog, IX, the flight deck full of drakes, and Annabeth flooded his mind. The message was clear enough that it crystallized into a single word that boomed about his skull. Protect. What the fuck's happened? They were afraid. Max became aware of something else, a buzzing like a distant swarm of insects. Lights, mere pinpoints, sparked in his mind. They moved and shifted, pulsing, with the buzzing in sync somehow. Max tried to focus on it, force it into coherence, but he could make out nothing but an odd staccato shifting pattern. "Is this you or us doing that?" Martha didn't respond, but sent out a chilling wail, and they beat their wings still harder. "What is it? Is it anything?" Max's senses were ablaze. No, their senses were ablaze. It was just that he couldn't decode everything he was sensing, not yet, anyway. The dominant feelings towards the hog meshed uncomfortably with a growing familiarity he felt for the light swarm. Slowly, Max began to filter the chaos, pushing his mind out towards individual pinpoints, certain that Martha would be steering him gently, guiding and teaching. Like pulling threads from a tangled ball of cotton, he began to tease scents from the mass of noise. Each thread had two distinct beats, and wrapped about them were harmonious sounds, a little like sighing and cooing, chordal notes and faint bass rumbles. Max was so close to being able to name what they meant, it made him twitch in frustration. Martha pulled an image from his mind, a hand scribbling a name with a pen. Max gasped. The threads were signatures. Each one he teased out was subtly or dramatically different from the last. And so it became obvious what they represented. "Drakes. Holy Mother, that's a battle, isn't it?" Martha didn't need to confirm it. Max found his breathing short. Annabeth would be out there. So would the remnants of IX. "Don't you dare die, any of you. I'm coming, but I've got to check on Mother first."
"Say again, Captain, you're breaking up," said Muller.
By now, the whole of the exec was in flight command. There had been no improvement in any situation, barring the weather, and right now they all wished the storm was still blowing full force. Across the Behemoth, teams strived to get systems back online and break the Hog's paralysis, with very limited success. Up in the sky, the Drake battle was increasing in ferocity. After the brilliant initial attack for his squads, the attrition rate was worrying, and the only squad not to have lost people so far was Inferno X. The MAFs were running a classic strategy, continually breaking off by squadron and retreating a few hundred meters before heading back into the fight. The effect was to move the whole battle gently eastwards and leave the Hog exposed, but no counterpunch was forthcoming thus far. But now the captain of an exterminator's platoon, who should have returned hours ago, was broadcasting from who knew where, saying something of great importance that none of them could decipher, and it was making Muller nervous.
"It, clicks to your... Maputo has... grow... 6... gek... art... on... pre... they... king for... tags... age... over...
Maya, you are breaking up. Repeat, repeat, repeat."
Muller slammed his palm on his desk and looked around at frustrated expressions that mirrored his own. He thumbed his pea-palm.
"Yarif, I'm sending you all Maya's comms. Get the voice analysis and reconstruction software on it right now."
"Apologies, sir," came the reply from outside Muller's office. "I don't have access to any analytical systems. They're still down."
"Get me Rosenbach."
"Yes, sir."
Muller snapped his pea palm away.
"Any thoughts?"
Solomon, Avery, and Kirby's faces were tight with frustration.
"Do we know where he is?"
asked Solomon.
"Not beyond his original mission coordinates, and that he must have a visual on the Maputo," said Muller. "He must be close. Ground visibility is still awful."
"Could Orin get a clearer signal?" asked Kirby.
"No," said Muller. "That's why she passed him to me."
"We have to know what he's saying," said Kirby.
"Really?"
snapped Muller.
"I hadn't realized."
"Cut that out right now," said Avery. "Find a solution, or say nothing at all."
It stank in the skull. It stank, and it was not a place for claustrophobes. Eleanor Rosenbach hadn't thought she was one such, but the journey up to the nerve ganglions in the centre of the skull, which carried messages to all major system centres, had made her think again. It was a long journey from the access points at the head of Skull Deck 1, up the engineering and biosystems flesh tunnels, and into the bone-architectured space where key systems boards integrated electrical, mechanical, and biological systems. A journey made necessary by the failure of the diagnostic systems in the ERC control centre. Arriving in the cramped space with nothing but a powerful splashlight and her pea-palm for company, Rosenbach sucked in a breath. The impact from the Wyvern, burrowing in before exploding, had caused fracturing all the way down here, some 8 meters inside. The skull was supposed to be impregnable, and she supposed it was, since the systems board still had power from the emergency battery packs. But the shock had been sufficient to induce the widespread paralysis they were experiencing. Visceral fluid was dripping through cracks in the bone, and the cracked viewing panels revealed swelling and bruising on the flesh surrounding the nerve ganglion. She pinged the systems board with her pea-palm and was relieved to get a ready prompt to begin a diagnostic.
"Finally, you're talking to me," she said.
While she waited for the diagnostic to run, she sat back against the curved bone wall and let her hands smooth across the floor, feeling the tackiness of leakage and, faintly, the warmth of the Hog's life. She needed to find a solution, something to unlock the paralysis, or at least get some defense online. And until she did, every one of the 10,000 or so on board was vulnerable. The weight of responsibility made her shudder, and she shook her head to dispel the image at the same time as her pea-palm bleeped, to tell her the diagnostic was run, and that Yarif wanted her to patch into Muller and the exec.
"Mr. Muller, this is Rosenbach. Are you reading me?"
"LNC, the Marshal Jen, Exo, and Commander Avery are all in attendance. What have you got?"
All data is streaming to the ERC staff PPARMs for analysis, and Helena is on call for clarification, said Rosenbach. Poor old Hog. She's taken one hell of a kick. Systems boards are on batteries. They're